Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome to this episode of the Ace of Spades podcast, hosted by your boy right here, Anthony Spade. And on today's episode, I am joined by none other than returning guest, but also my coach for bodybuilding, Mark Tominek. On today's episode, we actually go over our past 2 years of working with each other, from where we started, going through our whole growth phase that we did for 19 months, and now into our fat loss phase that we've been in for the last 5 months. So we go through all details, we kind of go through our experiences, kind of what we could have done better, what we observed, what made Mark make certain moves. So you guys get to see truly what dives into making a good coach and client relationship. That's what this episode is all about, and that's what we want to give you guys. So as you guys know, the podcast is brought to you by Morphogen Nutrition. You guys can use code SPADA for 10% off all Morphogen subs. New Morphocom, new Alphagen, new Protein. That sandwich flavor that they have, peanut butter and honey, absolute freaking chef's kiss. So go get you some. As you guys know too, go subscribe to the podcast. Go leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple and Spotify. Go subscribe to the YouTube. If you want to go watch us, this episode is on YouTube, amongst with a few others that we put on in the past few weeks. So go take a listen and go watch us too. So let's not waste any time. Let's get to the episode. Let's welcome on Mark Tominek.
Like, I'm obviously just now in competitive only, you know, and I have a few functional health cases still, but the reality is, like, those people that are in functional health cases, they are competitors. They are people that compete actively, but they need to get healthy first. But I mean, I have a lot of people for lifestyle that apply with me. I'm like, I promise you, I'm not the best lifestyle coach. I'm not that flexible guy.
No, you're definitely not. I think the one thing that you're definitely not is a handholder. So it's just like, I feel like a lot of us are all very independent. You also have a lot of coaches who work as clients, it seems like. So
I do.
The good majority of my friends that I've made here on the team are all coaches themselves too. So it's like, we kind of understand the expectation behind things. And like, that's my perspective, is I don't want to be like someone to need handholding, because I know how much that sucks for me. So I'm like, definitely don't want to do that with you.
Yeah. And you know, I don't mind, you know, I don't mind like teaching at all, like about the particular program we're looking at. I never mind that at all. I've had a lot of people ask really good questions lately, and that got me, it almost got me like rethinking about mechanisms and things, like deeper thinking that like maybe I just have put off for a long time and haven't really dug into. But some people ask some really good questions. But you're right, man, I would say a good percentage of the population on my roster are coaches. And I'm surprised at like how, and this is one thing I notice about coaches, and like you're obviously the exclusion to this. Coaches are really hard to coach. They, a lot of times, and I'll throw myself in this, we think we're the exception.
Yeah.
Every single time I run into an issue with coaches, it's not the other people. It's not the competitors. It's the coaches. It's trying to get them to follow a plan and get them out of their own way. And I'm like, guys, your roster is not as big as mine. So let's not act like we're more busy than I am. And you can't do this because of time. It's not a time thing. It's a prioritization thing, you know? But the one thing I do remember coming up in my coaching career is like when I had like 50 athletes, I was overwhelmed. I remember, you know, it was overwhelming. I was like, how do people handle more? And then I got to like 75. I had like the same thing where I had to adapt and get better, more efficient. Then I got to 100 and the same thing happened, right? Then I got to 125, and that's where I sit now. That's my cap. And I feel really comfortable there. But even there now, I mean, my processes have gotten so smooth and so efficient. It's like I could handle 150 if I really wanted to. But I'm just not in a space where I want to do that. I'm comfortable with where I'm at. I'm happy with who I'm working with. You know, if someone comes along that really fits the bill, then, you know, sure. Hey, look, you know, there's people that fall off here and there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way, right? I'm obviously, I have nowhere near the roster size. I'm very honest with what my roster size is, but I also add in a full-time job to the equation there. And that's when things kind of get things. But for me, at least the experience is it's pretty simple. Right. It just takes, I think a lot of coaches think that they just get a program. Right. And it's just like, I just find that it's just easier just to follow. I like just schedule my day out. I eat the same five meals. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't know this. And every time I repeat this, I'm like, I've eaten the same like five meals, I think, for the past 2 years that we've been working together, just in different amounts. Like throughout the time, like I really haven't changed foods like all too much because I hate, like, I remember one time you gave me a free day and I was like, what the fuck do I do with the free day? I was just sitting there like, oh, well, and then I went to the grocery store, got like all these cereals and like things. And I was like, we're going to go ham.
Yeah. Then you have a ball with it, but you're right, man. I mean, this is why I have a coach. Like, and although I handle a good portion of my programming still, you know, Austin still does the diet portion because I don't want to think about it. I need my life to be as efficient as possible. I can't have these times where I'm thinking about simple things. Like, what am I going to eat today? Bro, that costs me so much time that I lose with my athlete. Oh, yeah. I can't afford to lose that. So the process needs to be as efficient as possible. I need the plan laid out exactly what I need to do. Just follow that. And that goes for like when I plan things for myself, you know, with, let's say, training, a training plan, I've written it out. It's on a document because I don't want to guess. You know, I don't want to think, oh, what was that? You know, is this really the exercise I want to do? No, this is the training block. This is what we're sticking to until we hit a plateau.
Yeah.
So I plan shit out for myself. And I think coaches need to rely on coaches, their coaches more, you know, to do that and kind of get out of their own way. And what I've seen is they become more efficient in all of their practices, not just their bodybuilding careers or their health, you know, or their lifestyle. They're more efficient coaches. They're more organized in their life when they have less to worry about. When you can delegate responsibilities as a coach, and this is one thing that I'm learning specifically as like a leader of a team now of coaches, I'm learning how to delegate responsibilities better and trust the people that I hired to make decisions for me. And I don't have to do it all myself, nor should I. There's a reason why I hired the people I did. There's, you know, they're brilliant. They're educated. They're creative. They're smart. They're just incredible human beings. And I have to rely on them, you know, more. And that was kind of tough for me. As a coach myself, as the person that built Tominic Train by myself, I've always been a lone wolf. And I've always, if you want something done right, you call me, I'll get it done. I've always been that type of dude, you know, never been like, hey, let me call somebody else and then we can, you know, we'll figure it out. No. I'm going to get that shit done. But now I have so many people that are just relentless killers and they're so smart. They're poised, you know, they're precise. And they're also creative in their own way. It's like, I got to learn how to be more dependent on them. And that's been a journey for me. But if coaches can learn to do that, delegate responsibilities a little bit better, you know, hand over the reins a little bit more, you're going to become more efficient for your athletes. You can handle more athletes.
Oh yeah. I've learned over time. Cause I guess I'm in that spot where I'm kind of growing my own brand. Right. And I'm kind of doing my own things. And like, I'm that guy that will answer everything when I need to at this point. Right. And it's like, you know, we've had a very similar kind of path, right? I discussed it in my post today. I was like, well, we have the same mentor. Like we've kind of learned down the same path. So it's like, you know, it becomes efficient for you to teach someone like myself. Like, you don't even need to teach me, right? Because we kind of learn from the same thing. So I kind of understand how to reverse engineer the plan. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of coaches should be doing, to learn from you rather than actually depending on like explanations and things like that. Like for my lifestyle people, so they don't know what insulin resistance is. I will gladly explain to them what that is. But for someone who's wanting to get into coaching and things like that, I'm like, ask questions about reverse engineering the plan that I gave you and you'll figure out a lot of different things and make these different connections over how to actually apply this to your clients yourself. So
that word, that phrase, reverse engineer, that's super important. And if you want to be great at coaching, you're going to learn how to reverse engineer what people talk about when you collaborate with coaches or when your coach tells you what to do, right? So for example, me and Cameron, you know, me and Cameron Chief, we chat all the time. Mm-hmm. He's actually texting me updates right now, you know, right now from Charleston on Bree and Emily. And like, we keep looking, going back and forth, how they look, and they're on point. You know what I mean? If they're a little bit water, we kind of talk about what to do. But the thing is Cam peaks so differently than everybody I've kind of ever met. He's very intricate, but we hop on calls like every week. And we kind of talk about some things, whether it's like functional health items or going over blood work or whatever. And then, you know, he'll just like explain to me. I remember the first time he explained a peak to me, dude, it was like unlocking my brain. And like, literally, dude, I just lit up and I was like, I understand. Like, I get it. You didn't need to explain the intricacies. You didn't need to tell me what exactly to do. I already knew mechanisms, right? Of physiology and neurology. That was very easy. I already know pharmacology. That's a given, right? I know bodybuilding. But when you explain processes, and you understand the processes, all you need to do is unpack the information. And then you can apply it to almost any scenario. Like, oh, but it would change just a little bit with that person because of this, or, you know what I mean? That piece, when it comes to coaching, becoming a great coach and collaborating with coaches, being able to reverse engineer and unpack thoughts or thought processes has made me really good at what I do. And I'm not, you know, the greatest, but I want to be. And it that takes collaborating and talking and just hearing about, and just listening a lot of times helps.
Yeah. I think that's a hidden part that a lot of coaches don't talk about. And it's something that Braden, Dylan, and I have discussed multiple times now on the podcast ourselves. And we're like, we talk about everything. Like, we have a group chat. We have a group chat on the same thing with you and Cameron, right? Like, we talk on WhatsApp. We're sharing cases. Like, it's all these blood work panels and we're all just testing each other, like, throughout, to get different looks and different, and what we see, because we all have different strengths. Mine is more learning from Austin, is more down that functional health blood work route. Whereas Braden's the bodybuilder and he can help me kind of work with someone creating a good plan to actually start them growing and things like that. And Dylan's just great at psychology and actually understanding the person. So it's like we all three bring something really different to the table, and you get three different and you get two other perspectives outside of your own. And I think that's a huge aspect to becoming a good coach in a way, is just, I think that's the part that's really helped me grow the most, is just being able to collab with someone and be able to ask them questions and them actually willing to kind of take the time to explain it if you need that explanation.
Yes. And the older generation of coaches are so unwilling to do that because they feel like they got all the secrets. It's like, bro, you have no secrets. You have bro knowledge that's been passed down like from your coach, right? You really don't know what's actually taking place here. But the younger generation, the new era coaches, understand. They understand physiology. You know, they understand pharmacology. They've done all the studies. They've read all the studies. You know, they're actively looking at functional health cases, but in a bodybuilder setting. And it's opened our eyes enough to where it's like, and everybody knows the same shit now. For the most part, everyone knows the same shit. You can find it. So people are talking on social media about the same shit all the time, right? Which is great. Hey, the information is readily available. But you get really good, really, really freaking good at coaching when you start collaborating with individuals and just talking about cases. Because the reality is, like, what Cameron sees on a daily basis is going to be different from what I see on a daily basis. But if you put those experiences together, now you're just like adding the stones to Thanos's gauntlet. Like, everyone's buffed.
Yeah.
Because we now know everything. You know what I mean? We've encountered all the situations. And you get so good and so precise. And the more shit you see, the more susceptible and easier it is to start breaking things down. Like, right when you see something on a blood panel or GI map, you're like, man, I know exactly what to do. It's not even a thought, dude. It's just action at that point. And that's what it becomes.
Yeah, that's been probably the coolest thing, is like the ability to do that quick. Like, in terms, like, you could turn around blood work like that now in terms of things. So it's like, it's pretty cool to be able to get that quick. Whereas before, I remember talking with Austin and it'd be like a whole ass email like written to him. And now it's just like it's just a boom, boom, boom. This is what I'm seeing. This is how I'm going to address it. Let me know your thoughts. And he's normally like, that's correct. And I'm like, all right, cool.
It's cake. I mean, once you get it down, it's cake, right? But I mean, the learning process of it really does take time because there's so many intricacies and so many things that overlap or can impact each other. But now, like, I had a blood work panel come out with a check-in today, and this guy's check-in came in really quick. It was actually while I was mid check-in. So I just clicked on it. I saw the blood work. It's like, cool, open it up, you know, download it, open it. And then I looked at his training videos, looked at his blood work, answered him. I was like, dude, I know exactly what to do here. We got, you know, we had a little bit of an issue with fasting insulin. I was like, this is going to be easy to fix. No big deal, you know, and everything else was to a T, exactly where we wanted it. I adjusted his plan. You know, I have that Google sheet that I build out.
Yeah.
You know, so I make adjustments there. Dude, it becomes so easy. It's just like without thought. And I'm sure there's some people that are like, well, if it's so easy, why do you charge so much? I'm like, well, you know, it took me many years to learn that. Like the reason why I can do it in 10 minutes and it doesn't take me 10 hours anymore is because of the repetitions I've put in, the thousands and thousands of dollars I spent in education and learning, you know, investment into myself. You know, now I can whip up a program in no time, whereas before it'd take me 10 hours, you know, to build one out and really sitting there and think about it and like scratch my head. It's like, is this the right call? Now it's like gut instinct, man. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I find a lot of it's just that, right? Is when you're building out plans, kind of like, let's just see what happens. Like, we'll just test it out and see where the waters go from there. Right. Like, I remember when you, I guess this would be a great segue. I remember when we started via email. It wasn't even, we didn't have WhatsApp yet. I think it was like a month before you turned to WhatsApp. You sent me my calories and I was like, oh, that's a lot of protein. Number one, I was like, I don't think I've ever eaten that much protein in my life at that point. And I remember we just started recomping like after week one. And I remember being in quarantine. Like we were still in quarantine. So I was still following, we didn't even have a regular training plan yet. I was still following your like quarantine trainer you made.
And you're training in the basement, right?
Yeah, I was not even a basement, in an attic. It wasn't even in a basement yet. We were in an attic. Like my sister's husband's a nurse and he got like a Bowflex like expedited to him. And so I was like, okay, well, I got something. I was like, well, good there. And so it was just like, I remember us recapping. You're like, damn. The second email, I think you were like, well, we nailed the calorie. I somehow nailed the calories on the first go. And I'm like, I guess that normally doesn't happen. The more you get into it, because I've done it a few times myself where I'm like, nail the calories the first go. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it takes a lot of tinkering to actually get going.
That's because coaching is an educated guess game.
Yep.
It's not a, hey, I know it all game. It's, I'm going to base all my decisions based on how you respond. You may respond positively or negatively, but I could always reverse engineer what I did and get you back to where I need you because I have the experience, because I have the instinct, because I have the knowledge. And I piece it all together to create these educated guesses that are going to get me to the target, but I'm basing it on real-time data and biofeedback. That's what coaching is, right?
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah, I keep track of all the changes I make. So on each person's sheet, there's like a coach's notes that no one can see. And it just like has all the changes down each week that I have going down. I'm like, each one's highlighted in red. So in case something goes wrong, I just revert back to what I was doing a few weeks ago or something and reset them. And it's like, that's how I do it now. But we'll start. I mean, yo, we've been at this now for 2 years.
know,
it just man. So happened. It just so happened to align pretty well our date here with things. For people who don't know, I've been working. I mean, me and Mark have known each other now since, I mean, two years and a few months, probably before when he came onto the podcast.
Because you came on shortly after we did a podcast. We did the two episode about training, that dual episode. Yeah, it was great conversation. And then you came on and I was like, let's get it, man.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been wonderful ever since. But we went through some long, long growing season. So let's dive into kind of where we started. I mean, I didn't even have, you know, I had some really bad symptoms when I came to you. I was pretty high anxiety. Pretty very low test, I would say very, very low testosterone. Now knowing levels, really low. In terms really, of where I was
in the 200s, right?
Yeah, it was like 284 or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
And yeah, like, no wonder.
We're going to do some morpho tests.
Yeah, no wonder why I looked like hot garbage when I came to you.
And, well, that's why you dealt with anxiety too, you know, because there's a direct correlation between testosterone and dopamine, right? And the more dopamine you have, the more reward you have. When you don't have that reward system, there's anxiousness. There's unsettling. There's this unsettled feeling in you as a human being. You know, so yeah, man, that's kind of where we started. It was not a good place for you.
Yeah, that was actually even before we even started coaching. So before I even started coaching, I think I reached out a few weeks, like a month prior or something like that. And I was like, hey, I'm waiting until I'm done college. I wanted to get through college and get that set. And then I found that and I was like, hey, what do I do for this in the time being? And you just gave me, you said morpho test, morphocom. And I was like, okay, I could take those. Those are pretty simple. I was like, pay for those. Get those done. It started as pretty easy. Now, I think the biggest runway for us that we had actually as an advantage was the first like 3 months, I didn't have a job. That was probably the best thing that could have possibly happened to us during this whole thing was having a, like, even though we were still in quarantine, a runway where I had nothing to do but eat, sleep, and bodybuild. during that whole time.
Yep. And send me training videos. And that built the foundation of your success long-term, because if you can build successful biomechanics in an attic, you can build them in a gym with real machines and real equipment. You know what I mean? So although we were incredibly disadvantaged from the beginning, or most would consider it disadvantaged, because I don't even think most people would start coaching at that point because they don't have the tools, right? They think they don't have the tools, but we made the tools. We used what you had. We took everything and used it to our advantage, used the time and quarantine to your advantage, and you literally improved during that whole entire time.
Yeah, I think the most memorable part of that was nailing a dumbbell row. It was nailing actually how to get the lats. I've talked about this before. It was like the amount of videos I probably sent you on nailing my lats and nailing scapular retraction, things like that. It was probably way too many. You were probably so annoyed with me at that point. But I told people, I wrote a whole post about this, and it's like what's actually developed my back really well is taking that time in that quarantine and sending you like a million videos on it. At that point, now I rarely send you videos, which is probably my thing, but I remember you saying at one point, I think it was like I asked you if you wanted to see any videos, and you were like, this point, if you don't already understand how to hit a muscle, I'm not going to be any help for you. I was like, all right. I was like, there we go. So we started. So then we were finally able to get to the gym. I think a lot of people don't know is I wasn't fairly high calories during that point. Like, to truly be honest, I was very much in the maintenance. We kept holding. My hunger signals were thriving, but we kept holding for a long time until we actually got into the gym, and then we started to push.
Right. I mean, the main component of that was getting your test, allowing for your testosterone levels to come up and your anxiety come down, right? Mm-hmm. You can't push up calories when we have high stress or high anxiety.
Yep.
Like your thyroid's not going to function optimally. So in order to get the recomp that we were going to get, or even build muscle, those two things had to come first. And I think just getting you on a scheduled diet, getting you training better and understanding how to train better and execute better was like the foundation. And if you could nail that, I think, and I tell that with everyone, like if you could nail those things, right, or even training execution, just that alone, nail that, I can make something out of you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because then we know how to push your physiology to new levels. And your mentality, your mind is not going to stop you.
Yeah. And then I kind of want to ask you a question, because then we'll dive into the off season, what really went down, because we got fairly uncomfortable with things deep into it. But what makes a really efficient off season? At least for high, I wouldn't say I'm high level, but for more of a person that wants to go down the bodybuilding route, like what can they do to make it as best as possible when it comes down to it?
Yeah. It's consistency. I mean, you think about how many people that you coach that have a tough time nailing 2 weeks in a row. And I told someone this, I brought this up, maybe it was like 2 weeks ago. I was like, if in order to be a coach, one prerequisite was you had to nail your programming for 6 months with no fuck ups. How many coaches could still be coaches?
Not many.
And not many. And so I think the most important thing to be successful, whether you're a coach or an athlete, is consistency. But that's with anything, because if you're consistent and you consistently show up and you never back down, no one can deny you success. Eventually, you're going to hit it, right? If I throw a million darts at a dartboard, one of those million is going to hit the fucking bullseye, you know? And then you're like, oh, now I understand, right? But that's what it is. It's just building those repetitions consistently, like no matter how monotonous it gets. No matter how many things try to distract you, it's all about consistency, always showing up and denying your want for temporary satisfaction over things, because a night out drinking could set us back quite a ways. Yep. Right. And I'm not saying never go drink, right? Having a beer here and there, right? Okay. But getting shit faced, right? Going to a festival, a couple day festival, doing drugs. I've seen it fuck people up for like a week. And like, so it takes a while for their bodies to reset. In fact, I've seen it wreck people's contest preps. So I think the biggest thing in order to be successful in physique development, whether that's again, contest prep or off season, I know we're talking about off season, it's that consistency factor. How many perfect days can you nail in a row? We know we live in an imperfect world. You're always going to be faced with objectives that you're going to have to overcome, the adversity you're going to have to overcome. But that allows you to develop the skill set needed to be successful long-term. if I run into one point of adversity and I run into it a second time, I know how to conquer that the second time. It's not going to get my ass that second time. I already encountered you once. I know how to fuck you up now, right? And so you learn, you get better, you develop, you sharpen your blade. And that's what consistency becomes and discipline becomes. Then everything becomes habit. It's freaking easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I went sober directly after we started, or like right before we started. So that probably helped us a lot there. And then also I remember the first time, I think it was my birthday, which was October. So we started in May now. And then when it was October, I think that was the first time I asked for a free meal. I was like, I'm never going to ask for, I was like, I don't want to ask for a free meal. I remember being so nervous to actually ask you for one. And I was like, there's no reason to take one. Right. But I did, obviously, it was for a birthday, but,
yeah,
I still kept it fairly clean. And it's like, I think that's what a lot of people don't understand with things is what I try to tell people today in my posts is I was like, I've gone all in. I think there's a difference between some people who want to get consistent and some people that go actually all in with things from a perspective with the off season and any sort of phase that they're in is that consistency aspect of it. And I remember you brought it up last week when we were discussing our check-in, which is just, it's not even just the consistency. It's the effort, giving the actual effort across it. Because most people, I say most people could check off a box, but actually doing it with you kind of coined it, right? With intent, like actually giving effort with intent is something really different compared to that, especially in off season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, you can put that in anything, in any context in life, right? It's effort and intent with accuracy, right? Because it's not just good enough, right? Doing the dishes is not just good enough. Doing the dishes until they're squeaky clean and you set them back dry in their place where they're, you know, brought from. Now that's completing the job, right? You could just do the dishes and then, you know, leave them in the dishwasher, pull them from the dishwasher, load up the sink and leave them there. And then that's doing the job. You're still getting the same shit done, but I'm going to do the motherfucking job, right? And so that's going all in with max effort and intent in what you do, because I know so many people that can get the job done. There are so many people, but who gets it done right? And that's what really defines who's going to be great and who's not.
Yeah. And now we'll take it to where we get back to the gym, right? And we start to actually start to push the food. So what's your thought process through these things when you start to really start to push food with someone and you're like, okay, it's time to grow. When do you know when to push food? Cause I think this is going to be a big part is we pushed food for a while and then like, we didn't push food. Like, people think food got high. It didn't get high until like the very, very end. Like we kept things very stable, but going to that place where we actually started pushing food when we got back into the gym, when we had more tools available to us.
Sure. So once you're in the gym and once you're pushing and then you're learning intensity and you're learning what effort truly is, you're learning what true failure is. You're learning how to push past that mental barrier, that place where your mind tells you, okay, that's enough, but you need to shut that up and go past it. And once you learn how to do that, man, your body can handle some calories. Almost everybody can handle calories because the body's going to demand them. It needs resources for recovery, right? It's not stupid. So for me, it's like, okay, well, let's give it the resources it needs and then just keep driving intensity as hard as you possibly can. More than likely, as long as you're sleeping, you're keeping stress low, you're going to keep recovering. We can keep going back in the gym and keep doing damage. Okay, now I want you to beat all those PRs the next time. All right, if you don't beat one, I want you to literally think about that every single day until you go back into the gym the following week. And you just consistently keep doing that, adding calories. If you plateau a little bit in body weight and we're not adding a bunch of body fat, add again. You know what I mean? Add again. And you can keep that up for quite a while as long as the athlete is getting the food down and consistently, right? We're not experiencing any digestion issues, any wear and tear, which is why we kind of cycled macros.
Yep.
And I kind of gave you a break on carbohydrates because you just can't keep hammering the GI with carbs unless you use insulin. But even people that I use with insulin, like, I mean, I'm still going to give your GI a break because gut microbiome is not the most, you know, stable thing in the world, right? Yeah. So I just push based on that biofeedback, you know, and if you're plateauing in the gym and your weight's plateaued, I got to push calories again. And I didn't really worry about body composition too much. I knew you weren't going to add a significant amount of body fat because your body fat set point wasn't there. when we started, you were at your body fat set point.
Yeah.
I already saw basically your worst. I was like, don't get me wrong, we could push it past it. And we did push past it just a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
But the reality is, like, it's hard to get away from your body fat at that point. I mean, very, very hard. Like, you know, now when I do a calorie bump to my food, when Austin does, it's more significant. It's not like 25, 30 carbs. No, it's like 60, you know?
Yeah.
Because when you keep going up, that body is going to adapt because it doesn't want to get away from its body fat at that point. I mean, same the other way when you diet, right? It doesn't want to go the opposite direction. So it adapts. The thyroid adapts really quickly. And this is the same thought process with growing and pushing food. And I was like, if I can get you to stay high calorie for a long period of time, get your body to feel extremely safe where it is. And yes, safe means body fat, of course, but add muscle tissue at the same time. So that when we do go to cut, that you have the muscle mass to where you can actually be conditioned and see the muscle tissue and the density that you've added. But it's going to be easier to burn that body fat then. Your body's going to be more susceptible to peeling it off or willing to drop it, right? Yep. And reduce that. Even when you pull a little bit of calorie, it doesn't take much.
Yeah. I think that was a big driving point, right? It was my real first like actual growing phase. Like if we're truly right. being honest, like throughout my whole fitness career, I never really had like, I kind of just ate whatever I wanted, right? Throughout these things, it wasn't like an actual dedicated growing phase. Which is why I think my body probably responded fairly well because it was the first time doing all clean foods mm-hmm. and it just fully just flooding myself with nutrients throughout the whole time. And it was probably, that's probably what made it actually respond fairly well compared to probably what else along with the training, actually learning how to train correctly.
Right.
Those right. two things, like we said in the beginning, probably made that magical touch. But you know, I remember, I think the one time we were going to hold for a little bit. And then I remember the one time I got hypo after legs, that was probably the most miserable drive home. I think I had like 20 minutes home. I think I had like a 25 minute drive home and I was like texting you in the middle of my drive. I was like, Mark, I'm going hypo. he's like, oh shit. He's like, time to add some calories to your intro. No, you're good.
I was gonna say, I've been there where I was actually going hypo. I remember I had a half hour drive home. And I went without food too long and I was on a long analog. I was on Lantus. And I was like, son of a bitch. I was like, okay, I could stop, but I'm on the highway. And I was like, nah. I was like, you know what? The body will just pump out glucagon. I'll be fine. And I was sweating, dude. I was sweating bullets the whole way, all 30 minutes. Dude, then by the end, I was drenched in cold, but I got out of the car and I went inside and I ate some Sour Patch Kids and I was like, well, that's the last time I drive anywhere without Sour Patch Kids.
My parents, I got home. My parents were like, are you okay? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm not okay at all. I'm like, I need sugar. I was like, I need this sugar. It was the first time I ever went hypo. So I was like freaking out because I was like, oh, shit. I was like, here we go. But a lot of people don't know. I mean, we made a huge thing about this is we held. I mean, you wrote in your post, we held for months. There was one point. I think I was just under 500 grams of carbs every single day. We held for a solid 5 months. How do you know? How do you go through that and just say no changes like throughout the process during those 5 months, every single week to a client and get that over fairly well? Because I feel like for a lot of people, that would drive them insane to actually not have to have anything change during a quarter of what we worked, basically.
Yeah, I think most people would fire me. Honestly, most people would, but I knew you knew what we were trying to accomplish because we've talked about what we're trying to accomplish here. Mm-hmm. And you were smart enough in seeking education to know exactly what was needed to be done. And I think you understood the assignment very well because you, in those 5 months, you killed it. You ended up looking better after those 5 months. We didn't need to do a thing, but you don't truly know what the body needs or how long it's going to be there or how long it's going to keep responding until you're in the thick of it. Right. So week after week, we kept assessing and you kept getting better and better and better. I was like, man, okay, hold again. You're going to, you know, you look better. We'd go over the data. We'd go over your physique. And honestly, there were just so many times where I just looked at the pictures like better. Like, and it could have been 0.001% better, but it was better. Mm-hmm. And I was like, my guess is he's not going to need much more calories. Like, it's just not, we're just not in a place where we need that much. Right. You're not on enhancement, so we're not, you know, we can't train to the point of what a natural would consider overtraining, right? So those extra calories aren't needed. there's plenty of food, there's plenty of resources here. We're sleeping, we're recovering well, we're heading back in the gym, we're constantly hitting PRs. Fuck it, let it ride. You know, too many people get worried thinking they need to change something. The grass is always greener, and they always constantly think they need something, they need something. Most of the time, people don't need anything. They just need to be more consistent and more accurate with their effort. And so you continue to be more accurate. I remember your training kept improving. You kept hitting PRs throughout that whole time. Although seldomly it got really tough. There's some movements where, yeah, you're going to plateau a little bit and then you have a breakthrough, right? It happens. I get that all the time. But, you know, there's just no way of telling truly what someone needs and when they'll need it. And that's why the weekly check-ins are so important. You know, could we have done that? Oh, check-in every 2 weeks or something like that. Yeah, we could have. But watching your progress over the course of each week and seeing you improve was a much better insight, much better perspective in what was going on, you know? Yeah. And that's why we were able to hold so long, because we were observing and you were constantly just nailing it.
Yeah. Well, I think the one thing, so I go back to one of my beginning training sessions in the gym, and I got stuck on one weight and I got really mad. I remember I always write notes in my notebook of how the training session went, like how my pumps were, how were things, how was performance, how was my focus and things. And I remember writing in one of my notebooks, I talked about how I had like a really shit session or something like that. And I remember I sent it to you. And the one thing you said back is, I don't want to see this shit again. you were like, don't mentally masturbate on one session. That's been the biggest thing with it. Because like you said, like when you could tell people, I find it's a flip of the switch. I call it a switch when you tell people to really focus in. Like if you miss a PR, focus in on that next time. And I bet you break through. And it's like, that's kind of how I take in training throughout the whole process. Now I'm probably a little fucked up with my training. So I advise people to not train like me. But it's just like, I think that was a huge game setter with things. It's just like, you know what, I'm going to continue to hit PRs. And then during that time period, during that move, I think the biggest thing was probably I moved and I changed gyms. And I obviously, and you know, new because you've seen videos of my training partner, Fred and all them, like the equipment that we have access to at the gym that I go to now is just like unreal. So it's like the fact that we were able to hit muscle groups even better due to the equipment availability probably also made it like 10 times like easier to progress in terms of things.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, like the atmosphere that you're even in, I mean, that atmosphere breeds PRs. It breeds, you know, you wanting to be better because you don't want to be the weakest person in the gym. You do not want to be the weakest person in the gym. I promise you. Right. And if you're built anything like you and I, you can't settle for that. So every session is that you don't hit a PR in exercise is a mental like fuck every single time. And you hate that exercise, but some people will fall victim to that. And like, oh no, here we go again. This thing's going to kick my ass. Like if I did that, I would never hit a PR in exercises. Right. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I look at my leg day PRs and I'm like, I don't know how the fuck I did that. I don't know how I'm going to beat that. Yeah, I did. But dude, once I lock in, I'm like,
then you're good.
Like, yeah, dude, I'm at pendulum squat. I see Soul Snatcher on there. Like, not today, motherfucker. I'm collecting. And then I just lock in and go like, you're not going to beat me. And that's the fun in it, is knowing that, hey, look, either A, I'm going to get this or I'm going to die trying. You know, and like there is a certain fear that literally is hidden in there, but that's the fun of it. That's what drives you to go further and push your body further. And that's where you find out what you're made of, what you're worth, you know, and that's when people truly start to progress, is when they understand that, when they become so familiarized with the feeling of needing to be more successful in that one particular area that they're getting beat on. When you learn how to overcome that, that's when you get really, really good.
Really good. I think I found it during legs, because my legs sucked. When I came to you, my legs sucked.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We're horrible. They're still not great now, but they're way better than what they were. I mean, we put on four inches in an off season during that. Yeah. And I found it when you find it when the music just goes white. It just turns white noise. You don't really, you understand your music's playing, but there's nothing going on and you're just in it. Like when you're on the pendulum, I get that same feeling when I'm on the pendulum. It's just like, you're already like 8 reps in, 9 reps in, 10 reps. You don't hear anything.
No,
you don't hear your training partner. You don't hear nothing else. It's just you in it. And it's just like a dark, it's just darkness. There's just nothing there.
So you're like, did I die? I think I died.
yeah, exactly. And then, so we get to the point now where I think the next thing that we started to do was obviously we started to increase calories again. And then we even added in, we started to add in free meals to the plan and things like that.
At some point, it's like, how much more food can you get down? You know what I mean? Like, there's been points in my career where I've had like almost 1,000 carbs, you know, on training days. At some point, you're just drinking juice and eating, you know, gummy bears. Like, that's all you can do. Or go the opposite direction, you insert more free meals because you're going to get this influx of fat typically and carbohydrates. So it's just like anything to get some calories down, fuck it, whatever it is, doesn't matter. I remember my dad when I was younger, he's part of the old school bodybuilding crowd.
Yeah.
He's like, you want to get big, eat everything in sight. You know, fuck it, McDonald's, I don't care, eat it. And so that's what I did. I would literally just eat shit constantly just to get weight on me and grow. And I grew, it worked. I'm not saying it's the best, most practical method, but it worked. Now for people that are consistent with their diet, and calories get really high, it could be beneficial, especially when appetite really is not high because you don't enjoy food at that point. It might be beneficial to just use free meals to kind of push those calories and influx those calories, throttle them a little bit. And that's what we had to do because at that point it was like, well, if I don't do that, I'm just going to have to add more of whatever food. And at some point it just becomes freaking nauseating. So at least try to find a little bit of enjoyment somewhere because you're not going to get fatter because you're past your body fat at that point. It's not going to get, you know, you're not going to add more. Your body's not going to allow you. It'll keep adapting. And so it's just like, screw it, man. Have at it, you know, have a free day, you know, and figure out what you eat and try to enjoy some food. Try to fit down what you can, you know?
I feel like if you gave me a free day again and we were in off season, I totally would just like not eat. I would just be like, no, I'm just like, fuck it. Yeah. I was like, fuck it, Mark. I'll drop down like 5 pounds in a day. And that's
100%. That's what happens. And I remember Austin tried to give me a free day. I was like, don't do it because I'm just not going to eat. I just won't. I'll eat like one meal. I'll be done.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, we were doing big Five Guys meals, man. I was doing like extra patty, bacon cheeseburger with the fry. If we could go back to that time now, that'd be great. But, but we'll transition to what, cause I kind of want to speed this up just a little bit. We'll transition to the end. Because this is when we really started to track more metrics, which I think probably would have been benefit, like thinking back at it, this is how I reverse engineer things, is I definitely think probably when we started adding in the free meals and things like that, it definitely would have been beneficial to start tracking blood glucose probably at that point to kind of see that response, which is something that we obviously learned, right? Is my body started to become more, as you start to push that food, a lot of things, it's kind of very similar to when you start to take away food. A lot of people's activity gets lower. You get the same thing when you add a ton of food. So we were adding a ton of food. My activity was still fairly high, but getting to that step count was just getting more difficult. Things were, I mean, I'd never been above 175 and we were edging. We almost hit 200. I wanted to hit 200 so badly. Christmas Eve did not get me over that edge. And I was really mad. But take us through kind of that end of the off season and where kind of your mindset was at with the end of that, ending it there, comparatively to where we could have ended it and then the start of our fat loss phase.
Right. So, I mean, coming up on the new year, we talked about going into a fat loss phase. You're like, I would really like to experience one. I want to know what it's like. I want to know how you do it. And I'm sure you kind of learned a little bit. We're doing it slow and steady, not so much aggressive as a contest prep, but you're probably learning a little bit about what type of just modalities I use first and what comes second and kind of, you know what I mean? You're able to kind of pick that stuff up. So we talked about a fat loss phase. We knew it was coming. We kind of set ourselves up for it. We were in a growth phase for a hell of a long time already. Your body was in an incredible spot to cut. And then we found out, hey, there's a little bit of insulin resistance lingering, which again, we're not using insulin, we're not using PEDs. Of course, that's going to occur at some point when you're pushing calories for over a year. Like, yeah, it's going to happen. You know, the human body, the pancreas can only keep up so much. Doesn't mean you can't reverse the insulin resistance, but we had that to a certain degree. And so when you see that, you know, for consistently for a long time, it's like, okay, well, our partitioning, nutrient partitioning is a little bit off. Our glucose uptake in skeletal muscle tissue is kind of off. So it's like at some point, yeah, it's going to be beneficial to kind of reset the body, you know, and also I want to see all the muscle tissue we added in the past, you know, year and a half. And yep. Now we look back at those pictures and dude, it's insane. What we posted today, like that is 100% natural progress where we went through a serious long growth phase. I mean, very long and held for 5 months at one point, didn't change a thing, got to the point where the wheels were falling off the wagon. You know, insulin resistance is present. You're not hungry at all. You hate food. Like, okay, we can only do so much here. You know, the other step would have been adding in PEDs and insulin and things like that to kind of escalate this. But even then, it's like, yeah, it's just best to reset. We want to bring down body fat. We want to make you more insulin sensitive because when we go into the next growth phase after that, you're going to be super sensitive and you're going to grow much quicker.
Yep.
You know, so that was the whole thought process there leading up to that need for a cut phase because there literally was a need at that point.
Yeah. And then I guess going into it, I mean, we took a really severe cut. The first change that you made was fairly large, which I think a lot of people should do. I mean, we dropped down from, I think it was 600 carb I was having every training day down to like 450. But we actually didn't see too much change from that. I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. And this is why I wrote my post on Truth of Fat Loss the other day. I was like, the body can be really adaptive whether you go up or down. And that's that's been the unfortunate part for me learning going through this process.
Yes. Unfortunately, just you eating more in the off season does not mean your cut's going to be easier. I'm sorry to bust your bubble, but that's not how it really goes. You know what I mean? The metabolic adaptiveness is more genetic and like a smidge of behaviors too combined, but mainly genetic. If you want to change it, you got to get new parents. I don't know what to tell you. You know what I mean? but the reality is like, I knew we were so far away from the body fat at that point, your body was going to die to get back there. But in order to get back there, we're going to take a large amount of calories because just because we pull some calories does not automatically mean deficit. And in a lot of cases, when you're working up food in a off season, your initial cut is going to be pretty big. And I don't think a lot of people understand this. And I actually had an athlete get upset with me and actually leave because I pulled her calories down significantly in our first cut for a contest prep. Now her average calories were at 2061. She was upset with me. Right. I was like, that's pretty fucking good, actually. Like, I don't think you understand. That's not that low. But like, I understand people get upset because they think, well, I worked so hard to push my calories up. I got uncomfortable and then you took them away and nothing happened really. It's like, well, your waist dropped 3 inches, but I understand like you didn't see the scale really go down too much. Understandable why you're upset. But the reality is the body's incredibly adaptive and we don't know where the deficit is until we find it. When we find it, you'll know it because you're going to be hungry. You're going to be a little bit sluggish and tired. Your weight is going to start dropping at some point. You are going to see more lines. Your measurements are going to go down. Your weights in the gym, they may go down. A lot of times I think people mentally submit to the deficit first.
Yep.
And you've done the opposite. In your deficit, you've actually leaned into the deficit. Like, no, I'm going to PR. And you have.
The first 3 weeks, I actually did submit. I made an excuse. I never told you, but I made excuses as to, you know, they always talk about like your leverages are going to go first and your pressing is going to go shit. So first thing I think, oh, my presses are going to go right to shit. And what happened? Mentally, I was there. My presses started to go down like automatically after like week two. I was just like, So that's the only time. I just don't tell you. I just don't complain. I don't complain to you because you don't have time for it. You would just tell me to shut up.
Well, in all reality is like, you know, I would just redirect you and say, no, that's bullshit. Don't tell yourself that.
Yep.
And Ashley, who's in a contest prep right now for wellness and she's looking incredible right now. She still hits PRs at the gym. They're difficult. I know they are. And I know she has a difficult time doing it. But I know she trains hard. I mean, we spent years building her training intensity and execution. It's mental. And the harder you can push your training continuously, the less food you have to pull. The problem is people mentally submit very quickly, their training execution and intensity degrades, and then you got to pull more calories to make up for that. And so it's like, wonder why your calories are plummeting. You're getting weaker. Now you feel like more shit. It's like a snowball effect, you know?
Yeah. And then we spent a good few months dropping. I mean, my waist started to drop. That was obviously the number one thing. So weight wasn't really going anywhere, but we started to lose inflammation directly off my waist, which was thank God. Now I have the smallest waist I've had since like I started college. So that's fairly interesting.
Paper.
Yeah. Good. But we're looking at, then you started to add in cardio, which was only 3 weeks ago.
That's recent.
Yeah. Not too. For we started January 1st for people who don't know. So for a long time, for about 4.5 months, we really weren't doing any cardio whatsoever. So it's just steps.
Step count, and we were really consistent with calories and training hard. Mm-hmm. And that was enough to get you down a significant amount of weight, fix your insulin resistance, and that's it. That was plain and simple. I wanted to wait to add in cardio because I didn't want, for you specifically, I was like, training days are a gold mine for us. They're a field day. We love them. If I take away from your training time on leg day, it's going to be a real bummer. It could be a real blow to our ego and the fun that we do have. So for me, it was like, that's the last thing I want to add in. Although we're going to need some, I'll get us to a point where we only need a little bit and you'll respond. But it was getting that food down first. But we drove the high day, the low days, and the medium days. I mean, I think that calorie cycling works really, really well. Like the low days being pretty damn low, but that's the point of the fucking low days and why they're called low.
Yeah.
Like, you have your high days to literally boost metabolism, and then the medium days to meet your performance needs and your recovery needs. It's very, very simplistic what we did. And it's almost like common sense. Like, why would you not do it that way? And with most of my athletes in contest prep, I've done it that way. Then you get to a point where you need to push to contest prep levels. Then you go like X amount of low days in a row, then a one high day or two high days, and then repeat, you know? But we've done nice with macro cycling. It's worked out really well, and your performance has stayed pretty consistent.
Yeah, and I don't think people understand this too. I was like, I weigh more and I'm eating less than when I start. I'm eating like just slightly. Technically, my low day, I'm eating less than where I was when I started with you by a significant, amount.
Dude, the high days are still 400.
Oh yeah, the high days are still. Dude, yeah,
ridiculous.
I'll take the high day. But I want to kind of get into your thing of, hey, we're looking at this diet break that we just implemented actually today.
Yeah.
What did you see? I guess to kind of explain to someone, hey, what did you see that we felt the need to actually do it?
Yeah, I mean, we've been in a deficit for a long time now, right? I mean, you look at it, it's 5 months, right? That's a pretty hefty deficit. We dropped calories quite significantly on average, although we have that really high day that most people would die for, you know, in a cut. We still are lower in calories, and that's a long time to be low. So for me, it was like, and then I got to the point where I added cardio in, and we started to plateau just a little bit in weight. So I was like, you know what? This is a good time to do a little diet break. You know, bump up calories, we'll reduce cardio, pull that out, and just recover, train hard, have a ball, you know, this week. Then once we should be able to go back in the deficit almost probably with less cardio and the same amount of food we were on prior, and we should still progress because you have that little bit of metabolic adaptation. So it was just more, I wanted to be
a little safer.
I wanted to play. I do err on the safe side of the coach. I
you like to play ahead of it. You were kind of thinking ahead of things rather than.
Right. Yeah. Right. And when I look at people's physique, I also do this too. I err on the side of what's more safe, you know, but then I also do, what are they going to look like in a year? You know, what's going to happen in a year? I look ahead to kind of, and I prepare. Sometimes I do that too much. kind of fucks me. But like, I like to be ahead of the game. And I do that in a contest prep too. I would do the same thing, just be a little bit ahead of the game. And I just did another diet break with somebody that was been in a diet break or been in a diet for a while. But I was like, I don't want to run into hormonal consequences, you know, with you, with estrogen dominance. So I was like, let's do a diet break. You know, it's not going to hurt us. We don't have a timeline. You know, with you, we don't have a timeline here. Nope. Let's just do the diet break. It's not going to hurt you. I guarantee your training is going to be better this week. And then next week, you're probably going to look fuller. And then we go back to the deficit and you're going to improve.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you always want to play the cards where it's going. And it's like, let's just play the hand a little bit sooner than later. That's how I always kind of take my approach with coaching and things like that, especially with that. I'd rather be aggressive and then have to pull back slightly and then get more aggressive with things. So I understand that point fully. So then we kind of take a look where we're at now. I mean, we're down 22 pounds. Lowest was 22, I believe, at 175 the other day. We're looking at the future. Obviously, we can't discuss everything because of my job on here, but we could discuss we could discuss what tools. We could say we're going to use some tools. But where do we take, we're kind of, you say that vision of the next year, you know, where are we going from year two to year three in terms of your kind of, your kind of plan with things?
I've thought about this a lot and I probably think about it every check-in. Like I think it blows through my mind like really quickly. Like I just like, you know how like they have the visions in movies, like of like life flashing before your eyes. Like that happens to me, but for like clients for the next year, like, and then I just like think about it real quick. I'm like, oh yeah, that's where I want to go. So I want to finish out this deficit. I think I want to get somewhere in the low 170s and I want to see what you look like. I want to see a little bit more lines. I want to see a little lower back tighten up a little bit more. That's usually the last to go. But I was like, if you can get to that point, I know where that point is for you. If I know that, that helps me with experience in you, you know? And then from there, it's going to be about reversing calories, working back up. And then on that, I'm probably going to be more, now that you have more muscle tissue, we're going to be using more tools in the tools box this time.
Yeah,
I'm going to be more moderate with calories. I won't need to push calories as high. You're going to recover much faster. You know what I mean? We're going to be able to utilize food much better. So for me, it's just like, okay, well, let's play that to our advantage this time. And then also we get to understand a little bit more about your physiology as well. I don't think it'll take a massive amount of calories to grow. I think we'll be able to feed based on performance, you know, or based on your recovery and how you feel, more so than just having to push food for the sake of food.
Yep.
We'll be able to maintain a leaner physique. And I think your insulin sensitivity will stay in check longer. That enables us to grow longer. Because the first time I implement any type of tools, right, as a coach, it's with a person, typically I run it for a long time. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Usually I go a long time. And I know people do like the 12 or 16 weeks, whatever. I mean, you can, dude, biofeedback will tell you. You listen to biofeedback. That's our Bible. You know, so for me, it's about setting us up for that growth phase that's going to go a long time where we get to observe and gain a ton of data on you and a ton of insight about how your body responds. And you're going to grow a lot.
Sure. Yeah. I think the training, I think what I wanted to do, and obviously we discussed this before, is like, hey, I wanted to set the precedent. I wanted to give myself 2 years at least to do this, like, give me a reason to actually, I feel like a lot of people need to earn it. At least in my mind, I wanted to earn it. And I was like, I really didn't achieve everything I could naturally. So it's like, so now I know I've probably gotten to the point where I've achieved something really good. We achieved more than what we thought would happen.
Yes.
To truly be honest.
Oh, for sure.
And
both of our expectations.
Yeah. And so we looked at things and we're like, it's probably a good time. It's probably a good time to go down that route. And obviously we're to kick things off pretty well. If we can manage this next month. It might be kicked off with the trip to Cleveland to go train with, do a nice little leg day with Mark, which has definitely been, it's been in the works for a long time. It's kind of been planned, but I never been able to get out there, but now I have a full week. Now I have a full week in Cleveland to go up there.
When are you coming out? When is
that? I'm going up June 18th to Ben and Deidre's wedding thing. And then I'll be there that whole after week.
Perfect. I get back from Junior SA. It's on 18th. So I get back from there, or Junior Nat, sorry. And if you need a place to stay, you can stay at my house. More than welcome.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we'll figure something out. We'll figure something out there. We'll get this going because I'm going to be up there. I was like, you don't get to experience it. And I was just like, hey, Leah's there. The whole crew's there. I haven't seen my friends in a long time. I was like, I get 1 week off from work to bodybuild and eat and do nothing. Mark's going to make me extra small now. So I can't bury him on legs. My goal is to bury you on legs. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's my goal. I know how hard I can train, but I feel like I'm just setting myself up for failure at this point. But no, I wanted to have you on to kind of just go over what we've been able to do and kind of walk through a lot of things. I don't think a lot of people understand, hey, what's the relationship between a coach and client here?
Right.
And obviously I don't talk with Mark that much. It's really just a simple Friday check-in for me. A lot of people think there will come a point where we may need more communication, but for now it's just so simple for things. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And it's like, I could definitely send him more training videos. It's probably on me, but it's just like, at this point, I also work with another client of his, and we already film our training, and right. I know exactly what you're going to say at that point, and I already nitpick myself to the freaking max with training. So it's like, I already know what to expect. So
it's funny when people work with me for a long time, they already know what I'm going to say. Like, you know what I mean? It just becomes predictable. You're like, I know what he's going to say to this. Like, and I'm not like a guy that's overly surprising or like spontaneous by any means. You know what I mean?
It's always a, whenever you're at the top at a squat or something like that, it's always like, why are you waiting for the bus?
Bus, man? You at the bus stop waiting. Like, come on, get the rep on. Let's go.
That was always the comment for me, every single hack squat video. And it's just like, it was just trying to improve on that. But
it's so hard to break that. It's so hard because you're dying. You're absolutely dying.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Now Brant just decides to torture me whenever we go on the pendulum. We decide to ban the pendulum. So we made it even worse for us. We actually double banded it. So we looped it. And then we took both ends and put it on the pendulum. God. So it's just like,
that's brutal. Yeah.
That's I got to get my legs to grow. All right. We're trying to keep my legs right now.
Took the hardest exercise and you made it harder.
Yeah. That's how, like I said, I'm kind of sadistic when I train. So,
yeah.
But,
yeah,
that's
a different level,
but I'm definitely excited to get to go train with Mark in person. Definitely excited for the next growth phase. Definitely excited for what we have left in store here for the fat loss phase in general, because it's going to be, I mean, we're expecting to get significantly tighter. And that's my goal too. So Morgan, any last words for people? Where can they find you? Things like that. Anything you want to say? I'll kind of let you have your floor real quick.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, first and foremost, dude, I have appreciated working with you for the past 2 years. You know, it's just been incredible. You've been probably the most adherent person I've worked with for that long in my career, and you never got in your own way, which was incredible, because a lot of people, when they start with me, it's like they're getting in their own way. You never had that. You were just willing to learn. You soaked up all your information. Like, people like that don't come to you very often. Like, so it's just been a really cool experience for me as a coach, because I got to work with someone, I got to literally just build the foundation. And when you build a sturdy foundation, the sky's the fucking limit. You know what I mean? So like, a lot of coaches, I feel like, need to spend a lot more time with their athletes, teaching those foundational things, like teaching them how to train harder. That's so simple. All it takes is more time and more effort with training videos and consistency, right? It takes you being a little bit hard on them, like setting a level, setting a bar for them and making them reach it. That is so important. And so I encourage all the coaches listening to consistently do that with your athletes. That set is never good enough. It's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. We can make it more perfect. And you need to take the time to do it with your athletes. But I appreciated working with you. And I every check-in, I've always looked forward to it, because I know there's going to be progression. I've never had a question of, man, if he checks in today, was he on task? Did he do what he was supposed to do? I never had to wonder that. You know how much of a relief it is to open up a check-in on Friday after I've checked in with so many people all week. And I went through problem after problem, you know what I mean? Or after, you know, there were adherence issues, which, again, hey, look, I love everyone I work with. Let's not get that twisted. But it is really refreshing to know when I open this check-in, the shit is going to be done. Like, I want it, you know what I mean? Because we spent so much time there. So I encourage a lot of people to look deeper at their athletes and figure out, you know, how can you get them to do what Anthony's doing on a consistent basis. Now, you can't expect it to be perfect, but damn, just invest in them more, you know? And so yeah, I appreciate you having me on, as always. People can find me on Instagram at the Megatron, TomandTrain.com. Yeah, I mean, we got a good group, man. I'm just really appreciative. The one thing I've said every week in gratitude this week on my morning walk was, I'm appreciative of Tom and Train and all the people that we've gathered. And I know when you'll come up here in Cleveland, we have a really good group here, and there's more moving up here. And I couldn't be more thankful of that. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, how does one person, like, I'm this lone ranger from Avon Lake, Ohio, which is nowhere. It's west of Cleveland, right? Nobody wants to come to Cleveland and live in Cleveland.
Yeah.
But I'm here, right? And people moved across the country to come live here and be a part of what I'm building. And that's just the most special thing. And people come from all around the country to come visit here and train with us. have people come up on the weekends to train. Dude, it's just, it's freaking awesome. I literally would not want to do anything else with my life. So it's special when people come up. I can't wait for you to come up. Like I said, you got a place to stay when you come up with me. We'll actually be moved into our new place and be all settled. So.
Oh, new place. Oh, look at you. Yeah. Keep moving up in the world over here.
Hey, man, always reaching the new heights, trying to at least.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on. If anybody's listening to this, we really appreciate you listening to this episode, getting a chance to take an in-look at a coach-client relationship. If you guys enjoyed the episode, be sure to subscribe to the YouTube. This is on YouTube, so you guys can actually watch us interact through these things. So if you guys are watching us, we appreciate it. If you guys are on Apple and Spotify, go leave us a 5-star rating and review. Go share it on your Instagram stories. I know the last time that we did this, it actually blew up. Mark's episodes are some of the most listened to episodes that I've ever had. In terms of things, as you guys know, the podcast is brought to you by Morphogen Nutrition. I'm not going to plug Mark's code because Mark gets enough code uses. You can use code SPADA here for 10% off all supplements. Go support your boy. But other than that, guys, we truly appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode of the Ace of Spada podcast.
Later.